And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back. Another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Sufyan Munir, who'll be sitting in for Matt Watson today. Now, before I get too far into this episode, I do need to let you know that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. What we're going to talk about today is a very important topic. And why is it important? Because kids are going back to school or possibly going back to school in the midst of a pandemic. So if we only had some smart school technology to help with some of that, life could be a little easier. Well, what do you know? I just happen to have the CEO and founder of OneScreen here once again, Sufyan Munir. Welcome to Startup Hustle.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and this is a hot topic. So for those of you that don't know, and you definitely don't know yet, I have a 3.5-year-old and a 5.5-year-old, and who are here in Kansas City. And the big debate is, are our kids going back to school in a month? And what are some of the things that can help us know where they're at and what they're doing? And I'm really impressed with what you guys do. Now, for those of you listening, you know I like it when you're interactive. So go to onescreensolutions.com, or you can just scroll down and click the link in the show notes, and you can see all the cool stuff that OneScreen does while we talk about it. But let's go ahead and get started with a little bit of your backstory. So what is your story? What brought you to this point in our timeline now?
So we used to be a reseller of audiovisual technologies and other educational products, did that for a few years. And in the process, we were realizing that there were some big gaps in the industry. Schools, teachers, they wanted technology that was really easy to use and could improve the learning environment in their classrooms and in their schools. And a lot of solutions that we were selling were siloed solutions that were only solving pieces of the puzzle, right? And what ended up happening was teachers had to use 10 different products from 10 different vendors to deliver a basic lecture in the classroom. So we thought it's really important to make it really easy for teachers to use the technology so they can focus on the students and not on the technology that's allowing them to deliver effective lectures. And so we decided to come up with this product called OneScreen, which is a complete turnkey solution. It's hardware, it's software, it's cloud services, and it's backed by our Screen Skills Guru support, which provides training and capacity building to the teachers. So the teachers can literally put just one product in the classroom, and it gives them all the tools and technology that's needed to better engage with their students. So that's the product that we launched in 2012. And then over the last 7-8 years, of course, it has enhanced a lot. We have added more tools in our toolkit, but the idea remains the same. How do we deliver a turnkey smart school solution that basically makes it easier for the students to learn better in the schools?
Well, that's an ambitious undertaking. You know, most of the time when we have startup founders on Startup Hustle, they are not doing hardware, software, and cloud. Those can all three by themselves be a massive challenge and learning process to overtake. Now, in the words of many, many people that are in the hardware industry, hardware is hard. And then trying to get it to connect to other stuff is a challenge as well. I mean, has dealing with all three, that three-headed animal of hardware, software, and cloud been a challenge?
It has been a big challenge, but we don't see any other way around it, right? Unless you deliver a complete turnkey solution to the teacher. If the hardware is coming from a different company and they're using third-party software and somebody else's cloud, it just doesn't give them that ease of use and the freedom to reach out to one person for any type of support on the technology. Right. So it is an ambitious undertaking, but we felt that that is really the only answer that the teachers had been looking for. Right. And it has been a challenging road, but we have been on this journey for 8 years. And in the process, I think we have really streamlined our processes where, you know, all of these things are now working together very well. And we are able to deliver on that promise.
And you mentioned that you guys launched this in 2012, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
While that doesn't seem like a long time ago in startup years, that's an eternity. So with that, you know, I look back at 2012, and you know, I was in a completely different business, and I mean, it was like the tech and just the web in general had a Wild West quality about them. Bandwidth wasn't what it is now. Like, you know, here in Kansas City, we have Google Fiber, and that's a gigabit line up and down. And we were the first city in the US to have that. Yeah. And we were excited, and entrepreneurs were excited. And a lot of people moved here to be able to be on the first receiving end of that gigabit signal that would do some things like the solution. Like you guys have, I love that it says your one screen hype here, but talking about web-based video conferencing and collaboration software, well, that wasn't a practical reality for most locations in 2012, was it?
I think it wasn't even practical until like 6 months ago, because one of the challenges we had with schools was they were saying, you know, distance learning is not, you know, it's not important for us, right?
Right.
And we were
I mean from like a true technological standpoint, though, like you didn't even in 2012, like I saw Skype for the first time in 2009. Yeah. And even as cutting edge as that was at the time, it was hard to find bandwidth to support it, depending on where you were talking to. So, you know, schools and especially public schools aren't always on the cutting edge of receiving stuff. So, I mean, was that one of the very first challenges, was just even connectivity?
That has been an ongoing challenge, and it's improving very rapidly. And, you know, one of the things that you just mentioned about Kansas City, we have been a direct beneficiary of it, because with the Kansas City Public Schools, we have one of our nation's largest deployment done in Kansas City. And having that sort of internet infrastructure on the back end definitely, you know, facilitates our product positioning.
What was the relationship that Kansas City had with Google Fiber? Part of that relationship, was that part of why that came to be, or was that just?
No, I think the Kansas City Public Schools it's a very progressive school, and they wanted the best technology out there. And I think what ended up happening was they invited us and many other companies on kind of like a showdown where we had to go, and all the teachers walked in and they had to pick the best technology that, you know, would solve their problems. And they eventually ended up picking OneScreen. So we became the de facto technology for Kansas City Public Schools.
Well, that's cool. And thanks for bringing that to our kids. That's neat stuff. You know, some of the things, and like I mentioned that, you know, I think we often look at 2020 and, man, what a crazy year. We'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, we take so much of the things and the connectivity and the accessibility and especially bandwidth for granted, because, you know, like we said, when Google Fiber, that was the first, we were the first city that had that gigabit connection. And some of the things that people were racing for, they were talking about like telehealth and telemedicine and the ability to be able to have a high resolution screen and stuff like that. And, you know, and then, another thing with schools is, you know, they're all over the place. Some of them are well-funded, some of them are not. But one thing that we have found is that all public schools now have some kind of screen. They have like a monitor or something in the room. And I mean, do you find that that's the case as well?
Correct. Many of them still have the projectors, but almost every school is now going in the direction of the screens, replacing the old projectors with the interactive displays. That has kind of become the de facto, tool in the classroom that the teachers use. And you're absolutely right. I mean, they're all types of school districts, all over the nation, and they have different budgets and different needs. And what we are trying to do here is cater to all of those customers. So one of the programs we have launched is our subscription plan, where we give our complete technology, including the hardware, as a monthly subscription package and no upfront cost, right? And that has been started to become very popular because schools are only paying for the technology when they need it and don't have to, make heavy upfront capital investments to get this technology.
So it's one thing to provide software or hardware or solutions to anyone. It's another thing to actually implement the solution. What kind of a challenge has that been? Because, and God bless our teachers and all that they do, but many of them would be the first to tell you that they're not, quote, technologists. So what kind of a challenge have you, what do you guys do to make sure that, because without proper onboarding and setup and execution, you're going to end up with a bunch of hardware sitting there collecting dust. So what did you guys learn throughout that process?
Correct. So that is the biggest hurdle in delivering any technology, especially in the school settings. And I think there were two key components that we needed to address it. One was to have the right reseller partners who could go in and not only install the screens, but provide the initial trainings and connect with their IT systems and make sure that our technology is working seamlessly in the school's environment. So that has been an ongoing process, and we now have over 180 resellers throughout the US, and all of them have been qualified and certified by OneScreen. So we have a fairly strong on-the-ground presence through our reseller network. And then the other component that we have developed is our centralized tech support teams, which we call our Screen Skills Guru team, which is accessible to the teachers on demand, real time, anytime they need. And so we are fielding more than 100 calls every single day, where like some teacher will click on a button on our screen and it will instantly connect them to our tech support team via video call or an audio call or live chat. And we conduct like these 5-minute impromptu training sessions where the teacher will say, "I want to use this tool in my next class. Can you just give me a quick rundown?" And what we have found is that is the best way for the capacity building of the teachers, right? Where we are constantly available to them to train them as they need training versus just, doing, annual training sessions or anything like that. So between the reseller channel and our Screen Skills Guru team, I feel like we have done a really good job at solving the key problem, the key hurdle that the teacher
Yeah, and
used.
I would imagine that I would imagine that was a pretty important part of everything. Because, if you're out there and you're trying to build a startup that does anything, if people get frustrated quickly, and if you have a problem, especially if you're standing in front of a room full of people and something's not working, you don't have time to fill. You're not going to fill out a support ticket. And you're only going to need to do that so many times before people are just going to quit using everything that you do. Was that the reason that you had to have that instantaneous support?
Exactly. And I think it worked the other way around. I mean, that was the biggest problem that we wanted to address, making it easy for teachers to use technology. Support was the key component, and then having the hardware and the software technology that's easy to use and our support understood very well is what, made us realize that we need to have our own hardware and software platform. And our confidence level in our solution now is what's allowing us to offer this on a monthly subscription plan, where, if a school gets this technology from us and a year later they don't want to use it anymore and they cancel the subscription, the financial responsibility is on us because we have made the investment in installing the hardware for them and we have to take it back. So now we are at a level where we feel confident that once we put the technology there and with the support that we are providing, it is going to benefit the teachers, and our solution is they're not canceling the subscription on us.
So over the last few months, we've had a couple episodes, one of which we did back-to-back days that had winners and losers of the pandemic. And I mean, as a society, we're all losing, but as businesses, these things ebb and flow. Like when market conditions change, one business will benefit, another one might not. I would have to think that the demand for what you guys do is probably skyrocketing. Is that correct?
I think you can put us in the winners category there. Obviously there have been challenges with the pandemic internally, managing the operations remotely, as well as a lot of schools, a lot of customers just, shut down, and the customers weren't really there to use our technology anymore. The hardware sales on the interactive displays were going down, but at the same time, our one-screen height, distance, and blended learning platform, the subscription skyrocketed on it because, every school out there was looking for a distance learning solution. And in the meantime, we were able to repurpose a lot of technology that we had developed over the years into this new product that we have just launched called OneScreen GoSafe, right? And this is basically a body temperature and face mask detector, which a lot of schools are now installing at the entrances, because as the students come back in, it's really important that, they're taking the temperature measurements, making sure, they're keeping the schools safe. So with the new product, of course, the sales have skyrocketed as well over the last couple of months. So overall, I mean, from a business perspective, we are in pretty strong shape right now.
So you guys do a heck of a lot of stuff. Is all the hardware, is that all proprietary stuff that you've built, or have you partnered with other hardware manufacturers to get this stuff out to market?
No, so that's what's kind of unique about us is we are taking responsibility of every component that we are building from the scratch. So on the hardware side, our strongest partner is Qualcomm, that's in our backyard. And we have a very, very strong partnership with them where we're using their processors. But from their processor, we go all the way to building the screen. So it's our own motherboard. And then we have some ODM partners in China who are designing and manufacturing the screens for us. But in every product that we are launching, we are utilizing the Qualcomm technology, which is pretty much the greatest technology available in this industry today, and building our own motherboards, our own software from the scratch to deliver very unique solutions to the market.
Yeah, and that's always a challenging decision with anyone that deals with hardware. Now, before I owned my own business, I used to work for a company, a Japanese company, Roland, and they were the world's largest maker of electronic musical instruments, and they make 100% of everything that they make. And the reason is so they have that level of control. And it also has a lot to do with support. And some people don't realize when it comes to hardware, you have little transistors, chips, and stuff like that. And if someone stops making them and you don't have them in stock, you might not be able to support your own hardware. So was that part of the decision behind taking some control over making motherboards and stuff like that?
The main reason we went in that direction was because we felt that the industry was lagging behind in a big way, right? I mean, just to give you an idea, many of our competitors are still using these large interactive displays that run Android 7 or in some cases Android 6 operating systems with like low-end Chinese processors, 2GB RAM, a lot less power than what you get on your cell phone. And we felt it's almost a crime to give a 65 or 75 inch screen to a teacher and expect them to run all the educational tools on that screen. And, the processor running that screen does not have enough power that they get on their cell phone, right? So we decided to take the matters in our own hand, and we went to Qualcomm, and we got them on board, and we now have the fastest and the most robust interactive displays in the market that's running on the latest Qualcomm Snapdragon technology, has more RAM, runs on Android 9. So there was almost a 4-year gap. If you look at the tablets and cell phones technology versus what the interactive displays were offering, and we have bridged that gap by taking control of developing our own hardware.
And that sounds like a huge undertaking. I want to talk in a second about how you plan for all that. But once again, with us today, we have the CEO and founder of OneScreen, Sufyan Munir. Now, if you go to onescreensolutions.com, you can learn more about what they do. While you're on the internet, stop by fullscale.io and learn how we can help you build a software team quickly and affordably. Now, I want to talk about how you planned for all this. And I have a smirk on my face because I'm sitting here thinking, man, this had to require a lot of planning. You have hardware, you have software, you have some proprietary things, some third-party things, you have a reseller network, you have to teach, you have to support. You have to do a whole lot of improve, update, and upgrade. So how much time and effort have gone into just general planning at your company over the last 8 years?
I mean, it just never ends, right? It's a constant. We
are in an industry. That's why I had the look on my face. I mean, it's probably overwhelming. Yeah,
it is, but we are blessed with a really good team and some very strong partners. That have been very loyal to us, over the last 8 years. We are looking at about, in terms of like building the technology, I think we are about, somewhere between 300,000 to 400,000 man hours of, software and hardware development that has gone into this product. And that's just our own team. That doesn't include Qualcomm and Conca and some of our other technology partners that have helped us along the way. So it has been a very big undertaking, and the idea was never that, you will be able to fulfill this promise within a year or 2 years. We knew going into it that this is a very big undertaking and may take, anywhere from 5 to 10 years to get to the point where we are actually delivering on this promise. Some planning, mostly luck, I guess,
I'm not a big believer in luck. It's preparation and opportunity crossing paths. Now, you talk about hundreds of thousands of hours of planning. Now, during that process, there was probably a lot of trial and error. Are you able to share a story where you had planned for something and it certainly did not even come close?
So that has happened a few times, but I think what happens is then we go back to the drawing board and see, what can we do with. So we, for example, we built this technology for our interactive displays, right? To remotely manage these displays from a central location. And we thought that was a really big, it was a fairly big undertaking, and we thought that's going to be a big selling point for us. When we will go to the school districts and tell their IT teams that, from a central location, you can manage all those devices, you can do firmware updates, you can lock them down, you can, So a lot of time and money went into that product. And when we launched it, we were not getting, the kind of response we had expected. And, that product in itself was kind of a loss leader for us for a while until, we decided to launch a completely different product, this OneScreen GoSafe, where we were able to repurpose the same technology that we had built for our large screens and incorporate it into this product. But for this product, the same technology was very useful. And the response that we got from the customers was that was our number one selling point, right, for the product. So there have been a lot of ups and downs, just like any entrepreneurial journey, right? But the key is we try to make sure we are a nimble, small company. And so we want to make sure that every project that we initiate and every resource that we have, we maximize the ROI on those projects. So sometimes we have to just reinvent ourselves, right? If the original plan doesn't work out for us.
So you mentioned that you have a reseller network that spans, did you say 180 different resellers, or was that markets?
Resellers.
Okay.
In the US market.
So let's talk about that for a second, because I think a lot of people might not understand the importance of that network. Because if you go with a reseller network, if they don't sell stuff, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Obviously, now at the same time, those are often performance-based agreements, so they have a vested interest in selling more stuff. But what were a few things that can you describe or give us a couple comments about the process of successfully setting up a reseller network, and like what some of the hassles are with that as well?
Yeah, so that probably is the process that takes the longest in terms of, you know, as you're trying to scale the company. Because if you're trying to go and sell direct, you can, you can grow very rapidly. But I think there's a certain scale beyond which it becomes very difficult to grow, right? So the biggest challenge with the resellers initially is, you know, they don't know you. You're an unknown brand. You're some, you know, new kid on the block, and they prefer the big brand names, right, that they want to represent. So upfront, it's a lot of, heavy lifting to go and convince them to partner with you and put their skin in the game and, you know, learn your product and start selling it. And we had to go through that many years of cycle where we had like very few like good, strong, loyal resellers in different parts of the countries, which was limiting our scalability. But I think it's something that, you know, over time it just keeps getting easier and easier, right? Because when you create those success stories, when the brand name gets a little bit better, a lot more companies are willing to come and partner with you. And then the other challenge happens, and that's the challenge we are facing now, is you don't want to have too many resellers in the same region, because then they are competing with each other and, you know, they're not loyal to you again because they think you're not loyal to them. So that's kind of the position where we are in now, where we are very selective in adding more partners, and we really want to focus on our existing channel and make them successful. And so we are making it, you know, the criteria to become a reseller is a lot harder now than what it used to be a couple of years ago when we didn't have resellers. But the key is to focus on the right partners that share the same vision with us, right? Who are not box movers, who are not like, I mean, they basically look at it as solution selling and focusing on the education market, and are willing to sell the hardware, the software, the cloud services, the complete turnkey solution. And there are not too many resellers out there who have this capability. So that has been
Your company, do you do the marketing and like and raising the awareness of your brand and stuff like that? Or is that done through resellers and you help them with that? I mean, how do you get this product? How did you get your product to market, or how do you now?
So it's a joint effort, right? I mean, we do whatever we can with the limited resources we have. Some of our technology partners like Qualcomm, some of the bigger companies, they're a big help in helping us, create the market awareness. But of course, a lot of heavy lifting is done by the resellers, who in their areas are going out there showing our product. Our technology has to be shown to be sold, right? Nobody is just going to go to Amazon and buy this online, right? So a lot of it has to be done by giving product demos. And we have our own inside sales team that's doing these demos all day long for our resellers online virtually. And then we have a lot of resellers, you know, with feet on the street who are going out there and showing this product to one customer at a time, and that's how we are growing the business.
So if one of your resellers wants to do an advanced demonstration of your hardware, software, anything, then you actually have a team of people that assist with that?
Correct. We have an inside sales team. you just go to onescreencamera.com. We use our own technology where, you know, the people can see us doing a live demo on the product. And it's an interactive video call, basically, through which we are doing a lot of these demos.
Yeah, and for those of you listening, if you have to get your sales message out, that can get messy in a hurry. While you might be an expert on your product, you could even provide all of the support materials and everything. It doesn't mean anyone's going to read them or pay attention. So you sometimes hear the phrase, control the narrative. If you have to, you know, and that's the thing is I would imagine that your resellers sell other products that aren't OneScreen as well. And so trying to find them, hoping that their salespeople are any good at what they do and hoping that they know anything about your product, especially when it comes to answering questions, because you can get a demo down and I can pretty much guarantee you that whoever you give it to, is if you're not well versed at the product, they're probably going to ask you a question you don't know the answer to. And the more times you say, I don't know, or let me get back to you, or I'm unsure, or you're just wrong, it just pretty much destroys confidence in what you're selling, because the person you're giving the demonstration to looks at you and they're like, well, shouldn't you know something about this? Aren't you the one that sells it? They don't understand the relationship with the reseller and stuff like that. So I think that's a smart approach, man. I really like the way you guys have set this up. And you know, if you have anything that you're selling, you know, basically a reseller network, you can almost think about that as your own franchise. You know, you're franchising your own stuff through other people. What I like about that approach as well is, like I mentioned before, is that's usually a performance-based thing. So if you have to put great salespeople, well, first off, they know they're great salespeople. And second off, they're really valuable because these are the people that bring the bags of money back to the castle for you. So if you have to go find top salespeople and deploy them all across a massive geography, that's expensive. That's expensive. So the reseller network and performance-based sales, I mean, the most simplistic version of it is just a good old affiliate sale. I mean, that's the way you can think of some of that. So yeah, congrats. It sounds like you guys have figured a lot of this out. And I love your sales approach because another thing, if you have a sales channel or a network of resellers and you can't adequately, these people finally get to the point where they think they're going to sell something, and you don't have someone there to answer those couple questions that are going to get that money in the cash register, that will probably be the last time they push your product. Is that true?
Yeah. And we've been there, done that, made mistakes, learned from those mistakes. And but yeah, I think, again, that guru support that we have is as helpful for our resellers as it is for our end users. And that has been a big selling point for us.
So is there a lot of competition in this space for you?
So if you look at our individual products, right? Like, for example, you were talking about Hype, OneScreen Hype. I mean, you can say Zoom is a competitor that we are using right now, and Microsoft Teams and all those guys. But most of our competitors are siloed solutions. They are only addressing a piece of the puzzle. The way we have built all of these different technologies, from like attendance management to distance and blended learning to annotation and whiteboarding to classroom collaboration solution, content for K-12 space, and offering it as a bundled turnkey solution, today nobody else has such a comprehensive turnkey offering for the schools. And that is really what differentiates us, right? So for every single product, a lot of competition. But when you look at our complete product portfolio and the solution we are selling, there's still really nobody out there who's positioning the product the way we are doing it.
There's something to be said about having all the pieces to the puzzle, man. Because, I talked to, oh, man. Look at how many things out, hey, for those of you listening, how many things in your life are daisy chained together with one another. And you've even seen platforms like Zapier that exist to do nothing but connect you to other things. Cause and one of the platforms that I built and Full Scale owns is gigabook.com. And that's an online booking platform. And I got to say, like 50% of the time when someone's asking us, does it connect to this? We're sitting there going, not only does it not connect to it, we've never heard of it. because there's just so many things out there. And then the half of them are mainstream, and there's just a wild, but that connectivity is key to everything. Now, and this, you know, we're kind of late in the discussion for this, but I'm a huge advocate of having amazing onboarding. How important is that with you guys? Like how much time and effort and refinement have you gone in to the getting not only a user, but a seller, but anybody like to a point where they are using your product quickly? Like how big of an advocate are you behind of that?
So what we have learned is that it has to be an ongoing effort. It cannot be just a one-time onboarding for a product like ours. It's an ongoing long-term effort, and we have to take the user step-by-step through, I guess, from being like a novice user of the product to being, you know, a power user. And so what happens is, as soon as we ship the products and it's getting installed, you know, we reach out to the schools and we provide unlimited free trainings upfront for using the product, which generally happens in 2 to 3 sessions where, you know, let's say if we have sold the technology to a school, they will group teachers and maybe, you know, groups of 20 or 25, and we'll conduct 3 training sessions for each of that group, right? So there's an initial training on the basic use, and then a couple of weeks later, we do a more advanced training. So that is how we are kind of addressing the initial training piece and just getting them comfortable enough where they're not shying away from just walking up to the screen and starting to use it. But then from there onwards, I think that idea of we are there to train you whenever you need us is what's making us different, because it's on an ongoing basis. Every day they're coming in, they're learning something new, they're calling us, we're teaching something new. So the usage adaption with a technology like us, what we have learned is it's almost a 1 to sometimes 2 year cycle where a teacher really starts using at least 50% of the technology that, you know, we have offered to them, right? So it's an, I mean, you know, it's a long process, but that's really the sticking point as well, because once they have started using the product and, you know, they've been doing it for a year or 2 years, then we know that teacher is loyal to one screen technology for a very long time.
Yeah, I'm sure that's that, you know, if you can get someone understanding and knowing your product, like do not underestimate how valuable that is, because people don't want to learn how to use something new. And that's you hear the term sticky. If a product is sticky, that means, you know, and I've seen at one point I managed a chain of retail stores in the music industry, and we had the worst point of sale system ever. And I called it out. I said, why do we use this? And this was a long time ago. This is like when you had to like hit F6, F7, tab, and like Control-3. And there was no instructions. I said, well, why do we have this? This sucks. It's because the effort of training 1500 people to use something new was grossly more expensive than living with something that wasn't that great. And, you know, so if you can get well entrenched in there, you're in pretty good shape. Now, you guys have a whole lot of moving parts and a whole lot of different stuff, which means that a level of leadership has either had to be brought to the table or you've had to evolve into that over the years. What are a few things that you've learned that transformed you as a leader, a professional, or a person throughout the whole process of building OneScreen?
I think the most important lesson was to have a leadership team that's smarter than me, and they empower them to make, you know, the decision. So we have offices in 7 countries now, and, you know, each one of those countries there's a person leading that, and you know, from my perspective, I'm kind of more hands off now from day to day operations and really looking at the bigger picture, you know, in terms of product roadmap and the vision for the company. But I'm just blessed with a, you know, really strong leadership team that's you know, running the day-to-day operations in different parts of the world very efficiently.
Is there something that you do regularly to improve your success, your happiness, or perhaps your creativity?
At a personal level?
Yeah, just anything. I mean, I think that you know, we actually, I just prior to recording this, I was on our weekly manager call where, and you know, in this, I've had a really good last month or two. And so much of that had to do with what you just talked about, having great support people and leadership and doing different things, because the more that they can keep me away from doing certain things, the more of other things I'm able to do. You know, there's just a simple phrase, all you can do is all you can do. For me, I'll give you an example. For me, I'm getting older. I'm 45 years old at this point, but I've learned to spot moments where creativity is flowing from me, and I stay on top of that wave as long as I humanly can, because it is very difficult to know when the next one's coming back by. So in some cases, if I feel like I have that clarity or creativity, I might stay awake for 2 days until I can't handle it anymore, because the things that are coming out of me and the things that are, you know, but if I hadn't learned to recognize that, I'd be missing out on some really great stuff. Is there any signals or flares or anything that you've learned or...
I think I can relate to some of what you're saying. I think, you know, in my case, I have, you know, two boys, twins, 9 year old. And so every evening going back to them, spending the evening with them, like playing like a child, gets me the energy to get back, you know, next morning and have, I guess, the energy once again to you know, go back to work and be at my full creativity and productivity. But it's the early hours of the day, which are always more productive for me. So I try to, you know, maximize those. And not getting bogged down with the details helps me a lot. Again, I mean, you know, the leadership team that we have in place has been with me since 2012. We you know, none of those people have left. So that really allows me to not worry about the day-to-day challenges and focus more on on being more creative and you know, focus on the big vision, big picture for the company.
I would imagine your early mornings are kind of like my late nights. The world is calmer. Notifications aren't going off. Phones aren't ringing. Employees aren't asking a bunch of questions and stuff like that. For me, I do some of my best work from 9 p.m. till 3 a.m. And that's just because the world quiets down. So once again with us today, Sofyan Manir, the CEO and founder of OneScreen. Scroll down and click the link in the show notes to learn more about what they do. Before we get into, you know, we end episodes of Startup Hustle with what we call the founder's freestyle. So I'll buy you some time here to think about your parting comments and advice that you'd like to give to startup founders that want to follow in your path. And while I buy you time to think of what you want to say, I will once again remind everyone that today's episode of Startup Hustle has been brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. So in closing, and by the way, thank you for taking time. This has been great. I really love what you guys do. And I think you've said some really amazing and valuable stuff, regardless of what industry you want your startup or entrepreneurial venture to go. There's been a lot of really, really valuable stuff that Sofyan has shared with us today. But on the way out, is there some advice that you can give to startup founders that want to find some success like you have?
I guess all I can say is, you know, this is not an easy path, right? On a day-to-day basis, there will be a lot of challenges. But if you aim high and if you believe in your vision and if you have the right team behind you, don't give up easily, right? Doesn't matter what happens on a day-to-day basis. You know, keep marching forward and good things will happen. They'll you know, come from places that you least expect. But having that persistency and a strong team with you is what's going to make or break you.
Yeah, and I'm going to parlay off that. I think that that's everything. Now, for those that don't have experience with that, it's sometimes easy to want to be cheap or not value like having the best people around you. And maybe you just have to figure that out on your own. But if you can just take everyone's word for it and try to find the best people possible, and with that, you know, hiring them is difficult. I have found that the best people that I have ever worked around, they were good right away. And they're not projects. They're not, you don't have to reclaim them from the rest of the world. Like they come in and they come in hot and they, and you know, right away, you're like, I've got someone here that's good. Now in the words of my friend Cameron Harold, and go back and listen to the CEO Whisperer. You have three classes of employees. You have racehorses, workhorses, and those that are meant for the glue factory. So, you know, it sounds like a very impersonal way to look at stuff, but it, you know, ever since Cameron said that to me, and this is someone that has been a support person and a coach for Marcelo Claré, the CEO of Sprint, and now the guy that's fixing WeWork, it's true. If you look at your own business and you think like, you know, am I surrounded by racehorses or glue factory horses? The answer to that is probably going to have a lot to do with how you describe how your business is working out or will work out. Have you found that to be true with great employees, that they're usually great right away?
Absolutely true. I think you're, yeah. I mean,
I have yet to prove that wrong. And I have just under 200 employees right now, and have had a whole lot in the past. So, but yeah. And then if you've ever read any, or even a portion of a self-help book, it says you're only going to be as great as those that you're around a lot. So keep that in mind. And there's a reason why, while some people find success over and over and over, it's because successful people do the things that successful people do. Figure out what that is. There's a lot of great episodes you can go back, and this was a really good one. So I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate everything you're doing, and really, I do want to thank you once again for your time. So I'm going to get out of here, man. I gotta go learn a bunch of stuff and figure out if my kid's school is using OneScreen.
There you go. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you. See you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.